Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah. This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. Welcome in. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Mike Somich here on a Football Friday. Pauly Howard with the day off. I'm in beautiful downtown Las Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino. Mike is in what I'm guessing is gloomy, overcast, windy, cold Santa Barbara, California today on a Friday afternoon. Or am I dead wrong with that assumption?
No, it's disgusting here. I mean, it is a frigid 62 degrees. The sun is barely poking through the half of a cloud that is up in the sky. It's a rough day here in Santa Barbara. Yeah.
Stay away is what you're telling everybody. Stay far, far
Yeah, not good. Weather's terrible here.
We do have a very fun three-hour program lined up today. On the show, John, of course, he's going to join us in 1 hour. John is the gentleman who last week going into Circus Survivor had 4 entries left and he could only use dogs. That's the way he planned it out from what I'm told. And they all got there. So I can't wait to talk to him coming up at that time to see if that's exactly how he planned it out this year. Drew Butler, former kicker in the NFL and with the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll talk SEC title game with him and championship game weekend, which starts tonight. Julian Edlow, DraftKings, coming up in studio a little bit later on as well. So, Mike, let's begin with what took place last night in the National Football League. And I'll raise my hand. It was a bloodbath. It was not pretty. The Dallas Cowboys, it was the second biggest bet, all told, on one game that I had this year in the NFL. And it was not good. The 3.5 on the money line as well. I have a lot of questions I want to throw at you from last night, but your observations from watching that mess from Dallas and a good job by the Detroit Lions by taking care of business.
Yeah, it was. I was a Cowboys backer as well. I had them plus 3.5. I had them on the money line too. So it wasn't a fun game for me to be able to watch. This was a coin flip masquerading around as a blowout, though. I still believe when you look at everything that went wrong for Dallas and the fact it was still a 3-point game in the fourth quarter, these two teams are relatively close. Mm-hmm. I feel a little bamboozled. I bought into this Cowboys defense being better.
Yep.
And the intrusive thought that came into my mind is maybe Kansas City just stinks on offense, and that's why the Cowboys defense was good last week. And so I'm kind of wondering how this shifts my thoughts on the Houston-Kansas City game as well. But this was a Cowboys team that just made mistakes that we had not seen them make. They lose the turnover battle 3-0. They have an opportunity to score going into the half and coming out of the half. They end up giving up a field goal going into the half because they couldn't retain possession and then turning the football over immediately out of the half. Everything came up roses here. You lose. Amon-Ra St. Brown looked better when he was hurt this week than he did healthy last week. And then you lose CeeDee Lamb midway through the game. It was a brutal watch as a Cowboys better because it felt everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong in game.
Oh, it was having a bet on the Cowboys last night was not having a bet on Dallas in recent form. That was a bet on the Cowboys from earlier in the year. Sloppy, don't know what you're going to get from Dak, but I guess you can do that. He did that same thing against the Chiefs, started off the game. Here you go. Here's an INT and go down and score easily. But the defense was terrible last night. And so that was not good. Like, had I known the team was going to resort back to what they were like in September and October, clearly I would not have been making those bets last night. But I have a lot of questions that I want to throw at you from the game as well. First of all, what was that from George Pickens overall the entire game and that effort when it was 44-30 and you know, Pickens was going to him deep down the field? Where was the effort, man? And I follow a bunch of like Pittsburgh media and they were all just completely, they could not wait to mock him last night. But the narrative was this: every Steeler fan watching the game last night had a good chuckle knowing that that George Pickens was going to show up at some point this year. And it did last night. Also, the Cowboys on 4th and 4 at the Detroit's 37 yard, at the Detroit 37 yard line before halftime. Now they're not getting stops at this point, Mike. You settled for a field goal at that point, thinking, okay, we're going to get the ball back at halftime. All we have to do here is slow down Detroit, not let them get any points. But you brought this up earlier. You left Detroit way too much time with that field goal that you put on the board to make it 17-9 rather than going for it. I didn't know about that decision. And then later on in the game, much later, when Detroit is leading 37-27, this is after Gibbs rushed in a second touchdown of the game. Dallas takes over on offense, 7-plus minutes to go in the game. Eventually, Mike, they have a 1st and 10 at the Lions 18. There's 3:58 on the clock. That turns into a 4th and 3, and they're at the Detroit 11. Again, down by 10. Now, this is a person talking here who, again, had Dallas plus 3 and plus 3.5. I get it. At some point, you're going to need a field goal. But let me throw this at you. You're that far into Detroit territory, and it's a 4th-and-3 at the 11-yard line. Why would you not go for it there, knowing that you're probably not going to get a stop on defense because you haven't gotten a stop pretty much the entire game when it mattered most? And I guess I can say this because I can't prove it, but I would bet on this. I think Aubrey was good from 70 last night. So why take the chip shot right there rather than go for the touchdown? But again, maybe I'm a little bit biased because I had Dallas in pocket.
No, you hit the nail on the head there. It is literal, like, just it's asinine to think that you were going to stop Detroit's offense and be able to get the football back without giving up at least a field goal in that situation. So the latter field goal that Dallas took there when they had 4th-and-3 inside the Detroit 20 made absolutely no sense. You need to score a touchdown there, cut the game down to 3, and hope that you hold them to just a field goal so you can get the ball back and possibly win with the touchdown. If you are fortunate enough to be able to hold them to nothing and you get the football back down 3, your point is dead accurate. Let's say you get the ball back with 25 seconds. You have one or two plays you can run. You don't need to go very far to get into Brandon Aubrey field goal range. If you need a touchdown in that spot, you've got to go down the entire length of the field. You end up having to throw a Hail Mary at some point. It is just an absolute mess of a situation, a terrible job on the coaching end there to make that decision. Going into half, I don't mind that field goal as much. Your liability there is really just giving up a field goal. It's highly unlikely Detroit comes down and scores a touchdown. I wouldn't have minded going for it either, because I do think your huge advantage at the end of that first half, start of the second half, was be able to double up on Detroit. And by leaving 50-plus seconds on the clock, you were not able to do that. But the later field goal was an atrocious decision.
Hated it. You had
to go try and score a touchdown there. You had to get 7. You had to cut that to 3 because the idea that you're definitely getting a stop is just crazy in my mind. And the fact that Aubrey can kick it from anywhere makes it much more likely you're able to win or tie the game if it's a 3-point game and there's sub 30 seconds left on the clock. The George Pickens thing was wildly infuriating.
Oh.
I understand why everybody at Pittsburgh is kind of taking their victory lap. I know this is always in him. How does it come out in this game? Why was it this game that he got triggered back into this? He is playing for a contract. People are talking about getting him huge money. You lose CeeDee Lamb in game, and this is the spot you decide not to try. The deep ball where it falls a yard and a half next to him, and he doesn't even try. He just kind of jogs by it. The speed of the comeback routes where he doesn't even break into a sprint and then just kind of lollygags and turns around. It was pathetic to watch Pickens play it last night. And I can't imagine if you were Prescott, if you were the Cowboys, after seeing that firsthand, you were excited to pay that man.
Oh, that's a great point. I was absolutely disgusted too. How do you do that as a pro? You've had such a great season, by the way, and you're turning this into a monstrous contract. And yet that's how you go out there and put on a game in front of, you know, it's on national TV, huge ratings. You got to have a kind of game to get in the playoffs. And that's the effort. Are you serious with that, man? Come on. That was terrible. And I guess, so can we start to, not even start, but are we burying the Cowboys after last night's loss? Or do you still think that? Go ahead.
If they win out, they do have a path to make the playoffs. It is a very, very tiny path now, though, right? The last night's game was huge for them. They needed to get that win. They needed to try and get to 11. There still is a world where they can win the division. And to me, that is their path into it, into the playoff series. They need the Eagles to come back to them. They need to end up winning 10 games, the Eagles. So they go 2-3 over the last five games here. And you sit in a situation where the Cowboys with 10 wins, they're 10-6-1. They get in over a 10-7 Eagles team. It's unlikely Dallas can get in with 10 wins and get a wild card. It looks like it's going to take 11, especially with the Lions getting that win last night. That bolsters them up, and now they're losing the tiebreaker to the Lions as well. It feels like it's the division or nothing for Dallas now.
Yeah, I would agree. So their remaining schedule here, the look-ahead line had Dallas 7.5 against the Vikings next week. They should win that game. I mean, my God, Minnesota's quarterback situation is as bad as I've ever seen. They also host the Chargers. They're at Washington. And at the Giants, in theory, there is a path, obviously, where they could win all those games. Now, as for the Lions overall, at 8-5 and behind the 49ers right now, 3 road games left at the Rams, and L.A. was 4.5 on the look ahead. Steelers at home, they should do whatever they want offensively. I want to say at the Vikings should be a win, but somehow this team already lost to J.J. McCarthy. At the Bears, I know they killed him earlier in the season. Bears are playing much better football. And there is this, Brian Branch now, with the torn Achilles out for the rest of the year. Huge break. Awful break for the Detroit Lions on defense. Another guy going down here, Mike.
Yeah, one of their most important pieces of the secondary. And we can't forget that Bears game on the road. That's going to be a cold weather Jared Goff game. And we've seen enough of a sample size that cold weather Jared Goff does not end well for this Detroit Lions team. So I almost mark that one as an L. And the question is, can you win the next three to get to 11? Because that is most likely what it's going to take to be able to make the playoffs here. And that Rams game becomes one that is a very important game for both teams, because the Rams have Seattle the following week and they lost any margin of error when they lost to Carolina last week. So this is to me, a very fascinating playoff run, because it is going to take 11 games, maybe 10 in a tiebreaker, to make the playoffs in both conferences. So there is zero room for error for a lot of these teams.
Yep. It is Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Mike Simich. And for those of you who have not joined VSiN Pro yet, we have extended our Black Friday special for one final week for $60. That's it. Here's what you're going to get. All of the access through May 1st. That includes daily best bets from our hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings, Circa, and Bracco, and AI prop tools everybody's been talking about, the 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus full coverage on every major sport now through March Madness, the NFL Draft, and the Masters. And with our college football playoffs betting guide dropping next week, the timing could not be better. The Black Friday special ends next after Sunday. Don't miss out. Go to vsin.com/subscribe to sign up now. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Up next, there is an angle this weekend that is 35-10 ATS since Christmas 2016. Find out next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Rolling along here on a Football Friday, Mitch Moss along with Mike Samich here on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up in 15 minutes, we will have a strong teaser discussion for this week, because there are so many teasable games, it scares the daylights out of me. But Mike, I know that you have a great angle on it, and you love teasing games in the NFL, so we'll talk about that coming up in about 15. The games that we have on the betting board, before we get to that, in general, what a game it is in the North of the NFC, and had the Lions lost the game last night, can you imagine how big this would have been moving forward for actually deciding who's going to win this bad boy? It still might, obviously, but the Bears are playing against the Packers. Packers taking money this week. I'm looking at some books, 6.5 minus 115, so trending towards going to 7 in this game. Here's my question to you, and I love this story with Chicago, and you know, I have Ben Johnson, coach of the year, so I'm trying to like manifest this bad boy to get there. Are they going to be able to back up that performance against Philadelphia when they took it to the Eagles? And a lot of people were saying, like, the Philadelphia media, even, and Vic Fangio admitted, like, I got kind of schooled there by Ben Johnson. It was like an A-plus performance. How did the Bears follow it up against Green Bay on Sunday?
That's a great question, because it's also on tape now, right? You put all of these different run schemes on tape. You have Fangio making those comments, setting up for this Green Bay game. You got to assume that this Packers defensive coordination staff is going to come into this game a little bit different than they may have had last week not happen there for the Bears and their dominance over the Philadelphia Eagles. What the Bears were doing so well was getting unique blockers in the way of defensive linemen, linebackers. It was motion that turned into blockers. It was unique players in the backfield that turned into blockers on places you wouldn't expect. So you were seeing a tight end in motion come across and take out an edge. And that allowed the linemen to go to the second level and to go after a linebacker. It was creating these huge holes for the Bears. You've got to think the Packers are planning for that. And the Packers' run defense has been good through the regular season. We've seen them handle this Detroit Lions, or seen them handle the Detroit Lions run game in both matchups there. And you've got to remember, this Green Bay staff has faced Ben Johnson twice a year for the last few years when he was up in Detroit. They should be more ready for the Bears rushing attack here. And to me, that means you've got to talk about Caleb Williams and what your Caleb Williams expectations are in this game, because he has just not been great. He still has the highest percentage off-target throws. If you look at completions over expectation, he is second worst in the NFL at this point. He is missing open receivers downfield. He can't do that in this game, because he's going to have to go after the Packers secondary if they want to move the football effectively and consistently. So that becomes the big question for me here, Mitch, is can we see Caleb Williams kind of step up and develop in this Ben Johnson offense? Or do we see him play the way we have for the last 12, 13 weeks, which is, you know, the 15th, 16th best quarterback in the NFL?
I think it's going to be the same guy that we get at Lambeau in a couple of days. And I think this is going to factor in as well. It's going to be pretty damn cold in Green Bay. We're talking about maybe 17, 18 degrees, maybe some wind. That's actually not even factored in the wind chill for this game. And against this defense now, again, where they have, you know, this year anyway, not every game, but the Packers have given us a couple of examples more than that actually throughout the year where they're like, yeah, this is a defense that we're not going to want to play in the playoffs. And, you know, they have been getting lucky a lot. I know people don't want to hear that word, but we saw what happened with the Buffalo Bills last year when they were plus 24 in turnover differential, by far the best in the NFL. And now that's flipped this year. Oops, what does that mean? They're not running away with that division. The Bears are plus 17. Next closest, plus 9. They're also number 30 in yards per play given up. So not great here with this team. And I do not like this spot at all for Caleb Williams. And I look to, I guess, tease the teaser segment that we have coming up. I'm going to have to be involved with Green Bay teasers pretty much across the board this weekend.
Yeah, that's a quick question for me. And I think a lot of that comes into your style of betting. Since this is at 6.5,
right,
I would rather bet Green Bay than tease it, right? If we were sitting at 7 or 7.5, it comes into the conversation more for me. Mm-hmm. But I have a way of getting around that. And we'll talk about that here in a couple of segments later, because I do want some exposure just to the teaser here. And yeah, your numbers are dead on there. They're plus 17 in turnover differential. The next best team at 9, that's a massive gap. It's why we've seen such a turnaround inside this Bears defense. 6.6 yards per play, 30th in the NFL. On top of that, this is a top 10 defense on third down. So all of the different defensive metrics that have large variance, the Bears are really good in. Yeah. Eventually, now look, this is a small sample size. An NFL season, though, is a small sample size. It doesn't mean that you're going to see the variance this week hit the Bears defense, but it's coming. At some point, they're not going to be able to win the turnover differential and have these third down stops, considering all of the underlying metrics just aren't as good. I will give the Bears a little flowers here. They are getting a couple players back. You're adding a cornerback, adding a linebacker here as well. So the defense should be a little bit improved, and you still have a banged up wide receiver room there in Green Bay. All of that being said, this game is in Green Bay. This is one of two they're going to play in the last 4 weeks of the season. I think this is a game where you get the motivated Packers team. And to your point, Mitch, we've seen the good Packers a couple times. We've seen them play 60 minutes a couple times. Doesn't this feel like one of those games where they come out and they play the good Packers for 60 minutes?
100%.
Because if that's the case, I think they take care of business here against the Bears.
Yeah, I would agree. In fact, I'm actually leaning towards using them in circa millions this week, minus the points as well. And I will say this, the Opta AI stats at VSiN.com, you can get those when you become a pro subscriber, VSiN.com/subscribe. The number one receiver that they have going over this week is Rome Odunze. They have him going over his prop of 37.5 by like 25 yards. So I guess, if, you know, we can assume here that Williams is going to throw for a little bit of yardage in this game. Does he get to 200? Does he get to 150? But I think, you know, 150, 180 in that range is probably possible. Who'd you say is out? Oh, is that? That's now fact. Okay, I missed that. All right, that's official. Now, Rome Odunze is not playing in this game. Wow, so that came down. All right, so scratch exactly what I was just talking about. The Opta AI stats, they have DeAndre Swift going under his prop, and they also have Kyle Manungai going under his prop as well. So they do not have either back having, you know, back-to-back really solid weeks on the ground as they come in here fresh off that great performance against Philadelphia on Black Friday. You have been all about this Texans defense the entire year, and I think that you were calling them, if I recall, on the network, Mike, the best defense in the NFL before the start of the season. And I've been betting their unders quite a bit lately, and now they're taking on a Chiefs team that has to have this game like blood. And the Chiefs were 3 earlier in the week, now 3.5. The total is 41.5 or 42. Is that still too high in your opinion?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's still too high. Yeah, I had this Texans team as the number one defense before the season. They have not left that spot in my defensive ratings all year long. There are very few defenses in the NFL that combine the dominant edge rushing pass rushers that we have here with the Texans, as well as an elite level secondary. And the secondary has actually gotten better in the last few weeks. I think it's been impressive what Petrie's been able to do, coming down, joining the box, playing in the run stop as well for this Texans team. But because they can rush with four, they cover with seven, and you've got elite level cover guys too. I mean, you have Stingley out there as a number one cornerback. You've got two very good safeties. Your number two cornerback, not bad at all. Like, you have decent pieces here across the board for the Texans on top of the elite stars that they have. And if you go back and you look, okay, when have the Kansas City Chiefs really struggled? It's when you have a front four that can get home with the seven that can cover behind. And that is exactly what the Texans offer here. We saw it in the two Super Bowls they lost against the Bucs and against the Eagles. We saw it earlier this year against the Broncos. If the front four gets home, it's a problem. This is a Chiefs offensive line that is going to have one starter from the start of the year. They lost three starting offensive linemen, and now you get the Texans. Not exactly the team that you want to be facing here in this situation. Texas offensive line still stinks. So yeah, I like the under. I think this is the Texans. I was calling them a generational under team earlier this year because of how bad their offensive line is and how good their defense is. I think 42 is too high. I think if Kansas City does score, it's long drives. I think the Texans are going to be forced into long drives. I like the Texans 3.5, but I love the under 42 now it's back on the board.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm right there with you in that one. I think the Texans are good enough to win this game outright. And this is the last team that I want to see. If I'm an opposing team in the AFC, I do not want to see this Texans team in the playoffs. We can expand on the game coming up. I wanted to pay off the tease here because it involves Cincinnati and Buffalo. Pretty good chance for snow in this game. Temperature is going to be around 30 degrees. This is from Steve Mackinnon, VSiN.com. There's a lot to this, but I wanted to point it out. In post-Thanksgiving Day games, when there is a win advantage that same year of at least four season wins for the home team. So the Bills have four more wins than the Bengals this year, and they're favored, but not more than 7 points. In this game, they're favored by six. Teams at home in this spot are 40-6 straight up, 35-10 ATS. That goes back to Christmas 2016. And teams in this spot are also riding a 15-game straight up and ATS winning streak. I know some people will say trends don't pay the rent. I understand that, but that's pretty astonishing when you look at that. And this, I guess, kind of point spread is telling you that, well, it's the Bengals. Joe Burrow's back. They just beat the Ravens, so it can't be much higher than this. But more on that game, more on Texans Chiefs, and we're going to get into teasers coming up next. There are so many games this week that fit the bill, but it can't be this easy, can it? We will discuss next on VSiN. Good to have you on board today. Thanks for watching on YouTube TV, listening on Sirius XM channel 158, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, or any of our great affiliates across the country. Mitch Moss along with Mike Somich. Paulie is out for today. So on the betting board in week 14, it just so happens that almost every game just jumps off the screen like, hey, bet me, tease me down or tease me up. And I thought it would be kind of appropriate to have a teaser-like discussion as if we're talking about Survivor, like talk me into this team or talk me out of that team instead, right? Because I think that's part of the conversation that I have with one of my Survivor partners every single week is like, okay, what am I missing here? Or talk me off this team. So we can run down all the candidates now, and you have these ranked. So we can begin with your highest power-rated teaser teams for week 14, Mike, and it's Denver. And again, part of it, and you can explain this though, is getting the number down in that spot where you want it, but Denver minus 1.5 as they play out here in Las Vegas against the Raiders.
Yeah, if you listen to a lot of gambling content, you're going to hear the word Wong teaser. Essentially, it's a teaser by a Stanford professor who came up with the idea that if you go through enough key numbers, it's actually profitable to play it at a number of minus 110, which is no longer available in the teaser world. So make sure you shop around and try and get your best price you can on the teasers at your books. You'll find anything from minus 120 to minus 135. Obviously, minus 120, much better. I am looking mainly for teams where I'm going through 3, 4, 6, and 7 when I am teasing. The lower the total, the more accurate, more valuable those points are, because you're getting 6 points in a game that's totaled at 40. Those 6 points represent a larger percentage of the total than if you're getting 6 points in a game that's 53. Therefore, the teaser is more valuable the lower the total is. Denver fits every one of these categories. Right now, sitting at -7.5, you could take them through 7, 6, 4, and 3. The total is sitting down at 40, so you have a low total where the 6 points are valuable. You have a defense that should be able to absolutely obliterate the offensive line for the Raiders here. They've given up 10 and 5 sacks in the previous two games. Now you face the number one pressure rate team in the NFL. This one, to me, is the creme de la creme, the chef's kiss of the teaser choices this week.
So let me try to talk you out of this for 2 seconds, and I don't really even have a great case, but again, I think that should be part of the conversation here. The Raiders, obviously, I would think they're right there with the Titans power rated right now as the worst two teams in the entire league. 5 games to go. Denver at Philly, at Houston. Ugh. The Giants and the Chiefs at home. So they're going to lose out, or maybe one more win, I think, is probably the most likely scenario here. But against like a division rival at home, and I know they have the Chiefs in Week 18, and that game might not mean anything to Kansas City, though. This game means a lot to Denver, obviously, for like the division, and also, more importantly, I think the one seed. Is there any way, like in this spot, the Raiders just, okay, this is it. This is our Super Bowl for the year. They put everything imaginable into this game, and that's where it's going to turn into a sweat, and they might be live actually at the end.
Sure. I mean, it's possible.
Or are they not good enough?
Like this, it feels like this Raiders team quit 3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
It feels like we've already passed that. We've had our Super Bowl moment. And now we're sitting in a situation where, like, we just want this season to be over. We want Carroll to be gone. We need a new quarterback. Let's just hit the hard reset here. And it's got to be, at the same time, a little, like, it's got to be rough as an NFL player. You're playing in your home stadium. There's going to be more Broncos fans than Raiders fans there this week. You don't even have a home field advantage here. Yep. And you're a putrid team who secretly wants to lose football games so you can get a better draft pick. To me, it's hard to even make the case that you're going to get like, oh, this is the 1A-plus effort from the Raiders. They quit 3 weeks ago. I mean, they tried to blow somebody out of bounds, literally like just wave their hands and see if the wind knocks them out last week. I just don't see this defense showing up.
God, they're so bad. They're just embarrassing to watch every single week. It drives me nuts. Unless you're overreacting to the Rams losing to Carolina last week, right? Where you're like, I don't know, Arizona this week now on the road. I saw some weaknesses last week. Like, you have to. Rams down to 2.5. Come on. This is going to be a Matthew Stafford special, and they're going to get right this week.
This is a train wreck of a defense against Arizona. You've got all your pieces on offense. It's an embarrassed defense after last week against Carolina.
Yep.
You've got to think the pass rush is going to be a lot better here. I do think this is a high scoring game. I have zero interest in laying the 8. Because I think the back door is wide open for Arizona to be able to go through at some point later in this game. I think this is a one you can look to over the total. But I am highly confident the Rams get this win, especially with the loss last week, especially since it's in division and you are still competing for the one seed in the NFC as well as the division. This is a massive game for the Rams. Just like people will argue look ahead because you've got Seattle coming up. But this game is so important for the Rams. I think McVay has them focused, ready to go. I think they take care of business against the Cardinals. Don't want to lay the 8.
Yeah.
Happy to lay the 2.
I'm right there with you. I rewatched that game earlier in the week. I don't know what I was watching with the defense against Carolina. I have no idea. The second time I watch it this week, I'm like, guys, come on. That's terrible. So again, in order, yeah. Mike Somich's highest power rated teaser options this week. Number one, Denver. Number two, the Rams. Plenty of options here. We'll continue talking about it on VSiN. Number three in your power ratings. I got to be honest. How is Minnesota favored this week against Washington?
I don't know. I mean, we don't know who the quarterback is going to be yet. For either of these teams officially, like it looks like Daniel's going to be in based on the reports from today. We don't know who the quarterback in Washington in Minnesota is going to be. I'm assuming it's J.J. McCarthy, but I will tell you this. I will take either starter with the Commanders over either starter, yep, for the Vikings. I don't care if I end up with McCarthy, who is the best option for the Vikings, against Mariota, who's the worst option for the Commanders. This is a Vikings offense that's broken. And the idea that you can tease this up to get to +8, and like right now, circa looks like Washington has flipped to the favorite here, which is surprising to me. I've not seen that move yet, so we'll have to check out and see if other books have moved as well. But if you can get the Commanders over 7.5, I think it's a great teaser leg. They're finally healthy on offense. They've got all the pieces back on the outside. This is a Commanders team that should be able to score. I just don't trust the Vikings to be able to do so as well.
You know what? I got the screen right in front of me, and I may have missed that because it's now flipped. The Commanders are a 1.5-point favorite, one and a half at a bunch of books, the way it looks.
Yeah, as of this morning, it was still flipped the other way. So this is a recent move because last time I checked the numbers, this was Washington was still the dog. Now, Daniels was reported officially in this morning. That may have caused the flip because we saw the move from Daniels, who is going to play this Sunday for the Commanders in. I wouldn't be shocked if the move there was from Mariota to Daniels through the zero.
Yeah, I will say this. I loved what I watched from the Vikings defense last week. That was a great game plan from Brian Flores. If they had any quarterback play at all worth a damn, I think they would have won the game. That should have been 6-3 at halftime. I mean, they made life miserable for Sam Darnold, but the offense, Brosmer was as bad as you name any bad quarterback over the last generation. And I'd say Brosmer was probably as bad, if not worse than any of them.
The worst EPA performance by a quarterback in the NFL this year was Brosmer last week. And we've had some bad ones. Like when you go back and you look at some of those performances, the Carson Wentz game, some of the Justin Fields games where he didn't throw for 70 yards. I mean, there have been some putrid performances, and Brosmer was number one with a bullet, negative EPA at quarterback position this year.
So it took most of the year, but the Buccaneers have slowly but surely been getting good news here with guys returning. We saw it last week with Bucky. I thought Bucky Irving looked really good last week for his first game back in 2+ months. And I loved that guy going into the season. And now we're talking about Mike Evans, and we've had Godwin back for a little bit now. And they already went to New Orleans and kind of killed that team earlier in the year. And that was against Spencer Rattler. I don't think things change here much. Tease the Buccaneers down to 2.5. Yeah.
Yeah, tease the Bucks down here. You mentioned the health, a big part of this. It'd be nice if Baker could now be healthy, that all his weapons are coming back and being healthy. Getting Evans and eventually McMillan back will be huge for this offense as well. They're the man beaters, and this is a Bucks team that struggled against man so far. I don't think that's going to be an issue here. This is a Bucks defense that likes to feast on the Saints offense. Traditionally, Bowles has been very good against the Saints. We don't see much switch in the offensive scheme here for New Orleans. I think the Bucks able to go out, pick a score on the offensive side. I don't mind laying it here either if you want to lay the regular number, but I think this is a great teaser leg.
Number 5 in your power ratings for teasers this week, you have the Jets. Now, some books have moved to Miami -3, so you don't want to probably tease up to +9, but for spots that still have 2.5 here, the Jets +8.5 in this game on teasers. I think that's a good play.
Yeah, if you can get the Jets +3, I have already bet the Jets +3. I like them as a teaser if they're sitting at your book at 2.5. I think going up to 8.5 is great. It's Miami in December in the cold. I think we've seen this movie before. Mm-hmm. I think we all know how it ends. This is also a Jets team that has been revived over the last couple weeks with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. They're able to move the football. The Jets, to me, are a very solid teaser leg. And again, I just like them at +3 if you go out and get the +3.
All right, before the line moves, the sharp plays is already there. They don't just follow the market. They help shape it. You're not going to outsmart billion-dollar sportsbooks or full-time sharps on their own and on your own. But with sharp plays, you don't have to. Powered by advanced AI connected to proven insider sources and active across the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and college hoops, the sharp plays delivers the edge serious bettors rely on. Free daily reports, real-time alerts, and market-moving insights straight to your inbox or your X feed. And since 2011... they backed it up with documented results, public logs, and transparent receipts. SharpPlays.com is the site. Trusted by pros, monitored by books. Stay ahead of the line. Visit SharpPlays.com. So based on this conversation right now with teasers, Mike has a unique approach this week for all of these games. He's betting round robins, and he'll explain how next. We continue here a little bit more on teasers for this weekend. I think this is probably, well, I was going to say the best, who knows, based on the results, but the most amount of opportunities we have in the entire league this year by any given week would be week 14 for teasers, right? 9 different games. That doesn't happen every week.
No, that doesn't. Usually you're lucky if you have one or two that you actually like. Like, you usually have three or four options in there, but maybe you really like one or two of them. This is a situation where you have nine solid options, and I personally really like five. So I'm attacking this board differently because I like the teaser selection so much this week. And I wrote an article a couple years ago around teasers and Wong teasers for VSiN. And one of the things that I thought was fascinating, if you looked at the results week one through six, you saw teasers do poorly. After week six, we were seeing them hit at a very high rate. It makes sense when you think about it, though, because we don't know a lot about these teams week one through six. A lot of priors still involved in your numbers. If you look at even Survivor last year and how chaotic it was early in the season, once we get to the later part of the season, we know more about what these teams actually are. And now in week 14, it feels like it's a great shot to be able to play some of these teasers. So I'm going to kind of be a little more creative here. I'm going to go with round robins to try and maximize the value of the teasers here. I usually set aside a certain amount that I bet on teasers. I'm going to kind of come up with an overall budget I want to play this week, and I'm going to play some two, three, four, and five leg round robin teasers here, where I can essentially get the five games that I like the most. I can put those in a five and down to two teaser level, and that's going to be the Broncos 1.5, the Rams 2.5, the Commanders +8, the Bucks 2.5, and then I'm going to have the Jags +7.5. As the fifth leg of that teaser set. And then I'm going to take the other games, and I'm going to take my top plays, which are specifically here, the Broncos, the Rams, and now the Commanders are out, so it'll just be the Broncos and the Rams, and I'm going to put them in three legs with Seattle. I'm going to put them in three legs with the Packers. I'm going to actually leave the Chargers out because I like the Eagles in that game. But I'm going to use eight of these nine games in some version of teasers and essentially create a different level of risk for myself in each one of these games and stagger it from that first level game down to the eighth game that I want to play this week.
So for people maybe new to the show, new to betting overall, a round robin, they're like, that sounds fun. What is that? So when Mike's talking about putting in a five-team teaser round robin, right? So all those teams that he just mentioned, he's going to get down to those numbers or up to those numbers. And then so he's going to go, so you're going to do twos, threes, fours, and fives on the same one?
Yes, on the five-teamer, which is the five that I like the most, I'll do twos, threes, fours, and fives.
So that means that if only two get there, then right, those two will pay off into one parlay. If three get there, then the twos will pay off, meaning A, B, A, and C, and then B and C, when you look at it from five different bets, and then you're going to get the A, B, C bet on there as well, and then so on and so forth. With four teams coming in, then you're going to have all the threes that are going to cash with their variations and also the twos as well. So it can multiply quickly, but it's a very fun way to approach something like this. I love the idea.
Yeah, it can be very fun or very painful, depending on how it goes, right? Because like you do have all of these combinations. You have 20 different combinations of two-team teasers in a five-team round robin. So you need to be able to get, you know, if you win four of those, you're going to be very, very profitable because you're going to get through all those twos. You're going to get through two threes. You're going to get through a four. That's where you're going to really be able to start making money. I don't recommend betting round robin bets unless it's a specific situation like this where you have a week where you really like teasers and you want to attack them. Generally, if I'm going to play teasers in round robins, I won't go above three. This is just a unique week for me where I want some exposure to four and five, considering how much I like these teaser legs.
Yeah. I'll tell you one fun way that I like to approach round robins as well. Again, it's not every week. In fact, it's like every blue moon. But if there is a card or an angle out in a certain sport that night and you like the dogs, right? Let's say it's a 12 game NHL slate and you like four dogs overall to win outright. Or if you like four teams to win by the puck line, you could simply, at that point, do a four-team round robin with the dogs or on the puck line and then do twos, threes, and fours. And if three get there, it's a hell of a night. If four get there, my God, Yahtzee. It's a great night. So that's the way that because you don't want to do this with like a money line parlay on teams that are laying minus 250 or minus 175. That doesn't make sense to me. But I think with the dog angle, that would be one approach. And I also like what you said then. So you're going to take that with the top five teams that you have, but then you're going to combine your top two, again, Broncos, Rams, and Seattle on a three-teamer, and then Broncos, Rams, and Packers on another three-teamer. And that's because Seattle, again, they're favored by seven. It's not 7.5, so you're not going below seven and below three. And with the Packers, they're at 6.5, so you're only going to go down below three. you want to go down or above two different numbers on a teaser. That's what makes it such a tantalizing bet, and over the years, profitable as well. If Seattle was 7.5 in this game, and if Green Bay was 7.5, where would they rank overall with your teaser options this week?
They would. So Seattle would jump up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Seattle would probably jump above the Bucks to that four slot. The Packers would probably still be 6 or 7, simply because I think there's a higher variance with the Bears. Like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Bears are good at football. I still think all the underlying numbers are what I believe, where it's the 30th in the NFL in yards per play given up. They have this number one turnover differential, which I don't believe is sustainable. But if there's one game that I don't fully believe in, or I think the variance could come and bite us, it is going to be that Bears game. So they would still be pretty low, but Seattle would move up quite a bit in this spot, taking on an Atlanta team with that defense that I really trust.
How does this go well for Kirk Cousins? Like, give me the path. Give me the scenario here where Kirk Cousins is fine, has a good day, and like the Seattle defense is not in his grill the entire time.
The way this works out for Kirk Cousins is that they run the football at an incredibly alarming rate. That this is an Atlanta team that can just grind it out on the ground against Seattle, which good luck.
Yeah,
they're
right?
Really good interior. Like, I'm not sure that's going to happen, but if Bijan could consistently go for 4, 5, 6 a pop, and you're able to get Algier in there and you can just run, and you see 22 passes from Cousins and 15, 18 of them are play action, and you're getting it out quick to Mooney or Pitts, and you have a positive game state. You were never trailing in the game. If all of that happens, then it could be fine for the Falcons. I just, that's a lot to ask. That's a lot of dominoes that have to fall to be in a situation where I think Cousins can have success here.
That, and I guess we could get shaky Sam Darnold again?
It's been 2 weeks now.
I know.
I don't believe he's a pumpkin in all of the regular season. If you can get pressure on him, he has some issues. I'm not sure this Falcons team can get pressure on him. Now, the problem for Seattle is the tape's out there now. We've seen 2 straight weeks people be able to dial things up and get pressure on Darnold. I would argue this, though, for everyone out there who is saying, well, this Sam Darnold situation is just a train wreck waiting to happen. Last week, he was taking on the Minnesota Vikings in Flores, a defensive coordinator who I think across the board, everyone agrees, is one of the most blitz-happy, confusing defensive coordinators in the NFL. He got to see Darnold in practice for 5 straight months last year. If there is anyone in the NFL who should be able to tailor a defense that's a blitz-happy defense against Darnold, it is Flores. Mm-hmm. That was the worst possible scenario for Sam Darnold and this Seahawks offense. I'm not ready to just say that's going to be what it's like moving forward just because Flores had such an advantage in that spot.
So here's one more game that I want to expand on here for a minute, and we briefly touched on it, but it is Jacksonville at home to Indianapolis. And so with a two-team, or, you know, if you want to do the whole Mike idea here with the round robin teaser, get Jacksonville up to 7.5. Are we sure the right team is favored in this game with the current state of the Colts, but more specifically their quarterback, Danny Dimes?
No, we're not. This is one of those. Why I like taking this up to 8. With the offensive efficiency that we saw from the Colts early in the season has completely disappeared. Mm-hmm. We were talking about this team on par or better than the 07 Patriots in points per drive early in the year. Ever since that leg injury, ever since we saw Danny Dimes get compromised, not be able to move as well in the pocket, not be able to take off, we've seen this offensive efficiency drop dramatically. This Jaguars team also was benefiting heavily from turnovers on the defensive side early in the year. They're not benefiting from those same turnovers, yet their defense has still been very good the last couple weeks. I also love the Jakobi Meyers addition. Yeah. I'm going to be playing his prop over 51.5 receiving yards. He got up to 92% routes run last week. It was as low as percent plays run last week. It was as low as 44% when he got back. He is the number one in Jacksonville, masquerading around as a number two.
I'll say this too. We talked about it on Follow the Money going back a good 2-3 weeks. Now, this might not cash, but I absolutely regret not having Colts to miss the playoffs in pocket at about 8 or plus 850. I mean, this is certainly a losable game after this at Seattle. I already bet Seattle minus 3.5 next week. San Francisco at home, Jacksonville again at home at Houston. They might lose out, and the AFC is both conferences, very logjam here we're talking about. And with his health, I think there's an angle here where the Colts go from the darlings and a possible one seed in that conference to, oh, they're going to be out completely. by the end of the year. It's Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Mike Savich here on a Football Friday. Up next, fun conversation. John Accorsi is going to join the show. He has four entries left in Circus Survivor. Used all dogs on the special Thanksgiving week. Was that his strategy all along? We'll ask him next.